Hello, this is Janet Gallen welcoming you to Love Letters Live. Today's guest is a beautiful young woman named Hilary Bach, who is an actress and a writer. And I'm just going to go to you and let's talk about you, because I'm interested in how you became an actress and what made you knew you could do that. Where are you born and raised?
Okay, I was born in Texas.
Oh, really?
But I was raised in Orlando, Florida.
How did you come? Well, what was your family like? Brothers, sisters?
I have one older brother, and it was a pretty southern community that I grew up in.
Was it nice?
Yeah,
it was beautiful. And your parents are still there?
Yes, they're still there. My brother is in Texas now, and in Austin.
Are they sad that you're here?
Are they sad that I'm here? I think sometimes. Yeah,
such
yeah.
A beautiful girl who'd want to see you leave. So, how did you end up coming here, and when did you realize you could be an actress?
Well, when I started acting when I was a little girl, my parents took me to see theater
in Texas
and in Florida. Uh-huh. So I was born in Texas, but
I
was raised
okay.
since I was three mm-hmm. in Orlando. And when I saw the theater, mm-hmm. I wanted so badly to be up on stage. And
how old were you then?
I think I was about 5.
So you knew that.
I remember wanting to do it. And then, you know, I did some school plays, and then I auditioned for my first community theater show, which was The Sound of Music, mm-hmm. when I was 7. And I got the part of Gretel.
So you sang.
And I sang. Mm-hmm. And simultaneously, when I was at home during my free time, I was writing plays and performing plays and trying to get all the kids in the neighborhood to be played with
yes.
me. And probably driving them crazy, because all I ever wanted to do was plays. So,
do you remember what your first one was about?
The first play ever? It was about like long lost cousins discovering each other. I was probably inspired by The Parent Trap or something. Uh-huh. And I just remember there was a scene where they were in the ocean. And we put
in your scene where they were in the ocean.
Hmm?
Your play, they were in the
in
ocean.
In my play, yeah. The cousins were in the yeah. ocean, and I put blue paper all over yeah. the floor and fish and things like that. So as long as I can remember, I've loved acting. And then it was a journey getting from being a child who loved acting to deciding that I wanted to pursue it as a career.
That's what I'd like to hear about.
Yeah. So throughout my childhood, I was doing plays and mm-hmm. loving it. And mm-hmm. then when I was in high school, I became more self-conscious.
What?
And aware of my deafness.
Oh, okay. So let's, for those who don't know, let's talk about that for a minute.
Okay.
So your deafness was always with you?
It was always with me.
Uh-huh.
But
from
the time I was 1 month old,
uh-huh.
I was given an antibiotic to save my life. I had emphysema,
mm-hmm.
and it saved my life, but took
yes.
most of my hearing.
And now, when did your parents realize that?
My mom realized it early on, but it's kind of a funny story. I have a little bit of residual hearing in the low frequencies. And so I can hear men's voices better than women.
Oh, sure. That makes sense. Yeah.
So my dad would come home and call my name, and I would hear him, but I didn't hear my mom.
Yes. Was that hard for her, or she understood that?
she had an instinct mm-hmm. that I couldn't hear, but she didn't check it out. I had a rough start to life. There was a lot of things going on, so they weren't zeroing in on that. They were just kind of like, is she okay? You know
yes.
what I mean? And then,
well, if you weren't responding the way that they thought you should, they must have been concerned.
Yes. Yeah. When they brought I was very, very sick as an infant.
Oh.
And so they brought me home at 6 months, and they had said, she's blind, she has cerebral palsy, she's brain damaged. So the fact that I wasn't responding wasn't like, it was kind of like, we don't know what we've got
yes.
on our hands.
Yes.
Does that make sense? So by the time I was 3.
Oh, because you have to be a certain age before they can tell something for sure by testing somehow. Right?
Right. And I think now the technology is different where they're able to test mm-hmm. infants. But yes, I was tested when I was 3.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when they diagnosed me.
And so what do they do with that then?
They gave me hearing aids, and I started speech therapy. And
Did the hearing aids help? Mm-hmm. Oh, good.
They do. And then, you know, there's lots of different paths to
sign. Did you learn to sign early or not?
I did not. I did Ever? Not learn until I do know. I'm doing it now. I learned when I was 15, 16.
Was that your choice?
Yes. So I was mainstreamed. I was, you know, the only deaf kid at school, and I was raised orally. And so I...
Is that, that what made you self-conscious, being the only deaf child in your school? Or?
Yeah, I think when I was younger, I was aware of it.
Mm-hmm.
But as I became older, I became more self-conscious. Yes. And I became more aware of what I was missing out on, and that I was different, mm-hmm. and that the other kids perceived me.
Did they treat you like you were? I mean, did you have close friendships?
I did have close friends. Sure. But I did feel a difference. I felt, not that it was horrible or traumatizing, but I felt that people sort of...
You felt the reality of it.
Oh. Yeah, I felt like people treated me delicately or babied me a little bit.
Uh-huh.
And of course, that made me so mad.
Yes, as a teenager, you wouldn't like that.
So all of that to say, in terms of my journey with acting, when I was a teenager, I sort of stopped because I thought, well, I can't be an actor because I'm deaf. That was cute when I was little, but it's not going to work for me.
Oh.
And there wasn't an obvious great theater program for me to attend. And I was also very sick from something that happened when I was a baby. So mm-hmm. it was just sort of a crazy time. And I was trying to be a little more practical and realistic and think about what would be a good job for me.
Okay, so what did you think about?
I thought about being a writer or an English professor.
So that stayed in line with...
Yeah, just somewhat in line. And I flirted with the idea of doing something in medicine because I spent so much time in the hospital.
Mm-hmm.
But once I started taking science classes, I realized it wasn't...
Not for you.
Not for me. So...
So where did it go from there, then, your acting? So you're 15 now. Now you're in college. High school,
then I go to college, and I start going to plays and wanting to be on stage, and I immediately took a theater class to fulfill my arts requirement, and immediately my heart was just jumping out of my chest, and I knew that I needed to... I just kept taking theater classes and kept becoming involved until... By the time I graduated, I had majored in theater and in English, double majored.
And your teachers were reacting to you how? Were they encouraging or what were they?
They were wonderful.
I mean, in what way specifically? I'm curious what they...
I remember the first theater class I took and my professor telling me that I absolutely could have a career in theater. And that and that, you know... I shouldn't let my deafness make me feel like I couldn't do it. And
did that kind of clear that out?
Slowly but surely, yeah, I think. So, and we did a production of Children of a Lesser God, and I got to play Sarah Norman, which was incredible. And I did some writing and directing in college.
What kind of roles do you like? I mean, if you had your dream roles just handed to you, is there anything in particular you like better than other things? Or is it after you're just open to everything?
I mean, I definitely think, like most actors, I'm excited about interesting, complex roles where there's a lot going on, and as opposed to so many of the roles for women, which are just
repetitive
and sidekicks and not as much. So I get excited about those meaty kind of roles.
Do you have a favorite couple of plays? Just curious what. What about movies?
Movies?
Favorite movies?
I spent a lot of time watching a lot of foreign films because there was a time too when there wasn't a guarantee that American films would have captions, so I would just go straight to the foreign section.
Uh-huh.
So I love a lot of foreign films like Ingmar Bergman.
Oh, because you have subtitles.
Right.
Uh-huh.
Antonioni and Fellini.
Now, do all movies now, I mean, if you see them on television, you can get them captioned.
Yes, they've changed the laws now, and so pretty much everything is captioned now.
I didn't realize that.
Yeah.
And, but what about when you go to a theater to see a movie?
When you go to a theater, the technology is getting better. Mm-hmm. Some theaters have a device that you put into your cup holder and you can sort of
Oh, so you can see your own.
Right. And some theaters have glasses with roads, but most theaters don't have anything.
Oh, so that's interesting. I was thinking, you know, across the bottom, like subtitles are on foreign films, but mm-hmm. no, this is a personal device.
Right.
How clever.
Yeah. Okay. So hopefully that will continue to become more.
So when you so you moved to Los Angeles.
But I moved when to New, I moved to New York first.
Okay.
And I
by yourself?
Yes, I didn't.
So brave. How old were you?
I was 23. And I ended up doing theater.
Right I'm just away. Curious about something. I'm curious mm-hmm. how that works. You're 23. You don't know anybody in New York, or you do?
I do. I actually had met the man who I'm now married to.
Ah, okay. So I was just that wondering, helped. Like you go there and you need to find an apartment and you need to.
Yes. I had met Alexander, my husband, and I was. Basically in love with him, and he
You met him there, or you knew him
before?
I met him
in New York a year before.
Oh, okay. Okay.
And he helped me find an apartment because he lived there.
Okay. So you had a nice sweet landing waiting for you.
I did. Good. But I lived on my own and made the city my own. And then
what was your first job there?
I worked at FIT, Fashion Institute of Technology, in the Disability Services Office, helping students with disabilities, especially deaf students. Mm-hmm. And I did a short play with Arlene Hatton. Wow. And okay, I did a short play. I'm not remembering the name.
Oh, that's okay.
But
I just wondered how it went.
Yeah, it was. I mean, I didn't get the job right away. I was pounding the pavement for several months.
And
teaching sign language and doing whatever I could. And then I got this job a couple of months in and started studying theater at the Barrow Group Theater in New York. And then I wrote a small piece that was autobiographical. And
so you were pretty self-directed.
And then I ended up writing a one-woman play that theater produced. And it was 1 hour long and called Birth Story. Really talking about my birth story and how all of the things that happened affected me and how, like what we were saying before, everybody has a story. Everybody has their challenges.
Yes.
And that's what makes us the world a beautiful place.
Oh, aren't you lucky that you're so talented, though?
I don't know if I'm talented, but I'm definitely a hard worker. And
well, diligence is important, too, though, for sure.
Yeah.
So at what point did you come to, and I have a question, you said you didn't learn sign until you were 15.
Mm-hmm.
So how did you learn to be a really good lip reader?
You know, that's an interesting question.
And then translate that to speech.
Right. Well, lip reading is a skill that, from what I understand, some people are sort of born with being able to be really good at, and others not doesn't come as naturally. And it really is a combination of lip reading and piecing together the little bits of sound that I have.
Oh, just like any language, you learn what words are being formed. Well, we all lip read. Okay. We all depend on looking at people's mouths.
And taking in all of the
Even
cues.
When we hear perfectly. Mm-hmm. It helps. If you close your eyes, it really changes things, even if we're a hearing person.
Mm-hmm.
So when you say, okay, well, how does that translate to?
So I think what happened for me, you know, I was in the world basically as a hearing person.
Oh.
You know, I was just sort of pushed into an oral world. And the great thing about that is it did sort of force me to become really good at lip reading and speech. And I went to speech therapy and I was practicing all day, every day.
Yes.
And then later I learned sign language. So those definitely
pros. Because to learn how to make words so beautifully, if you're not hearing, I mean, it takes some learning, doesn't it?
A lot of learning. I went to 11 years of speech therapy.
Oh, I see. Okay. So that's like a language class all its own.
Right.
Okay.
So you're practicing all day, every day.
Okay.
So, and I have, you know, like a lot of deaf people, I'm working with everything that I have. So,
yes.
the little bit of sound I might get combined with lip reading, combined with
facial,
combined with learning how to move my mouth and my tongue and things like that. So, yeah.
So you're in New York.
It's a lot of work.
Yes.
Yeah. So I'm in New York for 4 years. I got married in New York. I have a baby.
Oh, this is so nice.
So it was kind of like my career and my family life were happening.
Oh, thank you.
Were happening at the same time, which was beautiful and wonderful, and also maybe slowed my career a bit because I was.
Yes, but look what you got.
But look what I got. I wouldn't change it for the world, of course.
Yes.
And then we came out to Los Angeles in search of more.
Now, so how old is your daughter or son?
I have two sons, who are one is 9 and one is 5.
Oh, my goodness. Okay, yeah. This is wonderful, and I didn't know this. This is an interesting, wonderful surprise for me. I see. So you moved with your husband and two sons?
With one son.
Oh, the other was born. Okay.
Here. And
what brought you to Los Angeles then?
Hollywood.
Mm-hmm.
Trying to get more opportunities, acting, and
so what's the
film
first,
and TV. And
what's the first thing you did?
The first month I was here, I auditioned for the ABC Diversity Showcase, and I got that. So that was a wonderful experience, and I had some great exposure. And then right after the showcase occurred, the writer's strike happened.
So I remember
I had like all of these possible. So all along, because there aren't just roles just waiting for me as a deaf woman, I've been writing.
Mm-hmm.
So I started, you know, as a little girl, and I wrote in college, and then I wrote my one-woman play, and then since then I've been writing scripts.
Oh, good for you.
Trying to create work for myself. So
yes.
So,
and you'll know where to take them, more or less, when you're done, right?
I'll know.
You'll know where to take your scripts.
Well,
I mean, you know already ins and outs of this.
I don't know. I don't know how good of a business person I am. I'm working on it now. I mean, I have two completed
What
scripts.
Does your husband do?
He's also a filmmaker, director, actor, writer, wonderful editor. And so we've, one of the scripts we wrote together. And so we're working on that. That's definitely, I feel optimistic though. I don't really know what I'm doing in terms of
well,
the business side of things, but
the history
I'm trying.
Your history seems like it would encourage optimism.
It would encourage optimism.
Yes, yeah. What you've done already.
No, thank you.
That's wonderful. Really is there anything that we might have seen you in that we would?
I was in a film that came out 2 summers ago called The East, and it was a Fox Searchlight film with Ellen Page and Britt Marling and Alexander Skarsgård, and that was.
And what was the role you played?
Incredible experience. I played one of the anarchists. It's a film about a woman who is infiltrating a group of eco-terrorists. And
I'm laughing only because yes, because exactly. Because
like an eco-terrorist.
You do not look like any kind of a terrorist. So that's a tribute to your acting abilities
well,
that you could even
say,
do
that.
That's
the magic of acting. It
yes,
was so much
my
fun.
Goodness.
Yeah, so I played an eco-terrorist in that. And I've been on Law and Order, and I've been on Switched at Birth, and
so you're working.
I've done quite a few short films. Yeah.
Anything you do, I mean, you've got your foot so solidly in it. It's not like you're a newcomer struggling to get recognized. Oh, good.
No. Okay. And I just finished doing Death Last incredible production of Spring Awakening, which was wonderful, which is heading to Broadway.
Good.
So, yeah, I feel,
you're busy. Oh, that's
yes,
wonderful.
Yes.
You're busy and you're sweet and you're gorgeous and you're talented.
That's
what
really
more could you ask? What are your sons' names?
Finley is my older son and Nico is my little one. And they're very sweet.
And they're in school and
we actually have been homeschooling just to make our lives that much more
complicated. Right. What made you decide to do that?
We've done a lot of research about education and felt excited about child-led education and
so do you get together with other homeschool parents?
We do.
For social
things, very large community of homeschoolers out here, and so
now homeschooling used to be mostly a religious decision.
Yes, it
did. But not so much now, right?
No,
I mean I don't know what yours is, but
it's not a religious decision for us. I think there's a lot more people choosing, you know, alternative routes for education, and
Because the influence in the public schools is either not so good or not so safe, or what do you feel?
Yeah, I think the public school system is, you know, depending on
you could
where
do better.
You, live, you could
yes.
do better.
Okay, yeah. And the kids like it.
They do. Yeah, oh. And like there's a lot of other kids who are in the same situation.
And so it's real disciplined, right? I mean, there is.
It depends on
class time and then break time and.
It depends on how you want to do it. I mean, everybody does it differently, and so we've gone through phases, but.
And you do the teaching, and your husband does the teaching.
We do, and we found that for our kids, a more relaxed schedule works better. But other families might find.
Yeah,
you know,
I see. I didn't realize that.
Yeah.
So you're between the two of you. You know how to teach every subject.
No,
you can teach match, and you can teach them how to read, and you can.
You know, they're little, so at this point, it's. But if we don't know something, we look it up and relearn it.
Oh, that's what I wondered.
You know,
yes.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, I couldn't teach a person to read to save my life. I think that's a real skill that I don't particularly have, so.
Well, we've been.
Good for you.
Like I said, I don't know how incredible we've been at that. We've been trusting more of a child-led approach, and so they've been.
Good.
So it's finding that balance of encouraging and being patient and letting them find their way.
Mm-hmm.
And my older son is reading really well now, and my little one.
So then somebody knows. So somebody does know how to teach them.
Well, I don't know. We haven't done much, you know. I think that kids are more equipped to teach themselves than we might give them the credit for.
I mean, I think you could say that about parenthood in general.
Yeah.
You can stay out of the way a little bit more than you think you.
Mm-hmm. I think so.
Something like that.
Yeah.
What are their natural talents that you can see? If you can.
My older son is. He loves stories and hearing stories and telling stories and details and and he loves to just make up stories and make us laugh he's really into kung fu right now
and your little one
and my little one makes is really the clown. He's definitely a jokester.
So they both tend to entertain.
They do, yeah.
But let me ask you something. Do you ever write letters? Have you ever?
I have. When I was a little girl, I had pen pals. And
that's something that I don't know. I'm glad there was that then.
Yes.
How did you get one?
My first might have been through school.
Oh,
but
nice.
My best pen pal situation was, I don't know if it's a proper pen pal, it was a friend from camp.
Mm-hmm.
And
so somebody you'd met
so
and then you maintained.
And then we wrote to each other like once a week.
That's really nice.
Know,
okay.
Year, and then we'd be together in the summer camp.
That's so nice. I mean, my passion here really is the love letters and the letters
mm-hmm.
of affection and staying connected through.
Mm-hmm.
And as you are a writer,
mm-hmm.
that would come naturally, although not necessarily that you would maybe have the time for it, but do you still have your friends' letters?
I do. I have them. And I used to write to several of my very close girlfriends growing up and even through my 20s. And I actually just received an email from a friend whom I've never met that I'm friends with because of the internet. She lives in France in the mountains. And she just wrote me a week ago, emailed me, and said that she wanted to send me a real letter.
Oh,
and could
good.
I send her a letter?
Oh.
So that is kind of exciting because I thought,
isn't that?
Oh,
see,
I'm going to get a
that's
real letter.
Why I need a television moment so people can see the smile on your face at the very thought of that.
Yeah.
There is something gripping about it.
Absolutely.
Yes.
And I have one friend, and we both have small children, so it's hard to make the time, but sometimes we write each other real letters and we do the stamp. The
delicious. When you're 90, you're going to be so happy.
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever written to your sons? Not yet.
Not yet, no.
If you ever have time, just sometimes at the end of a day, to sit down and drop a little note, you know, dear Nico, dear Philly, I was so happy to see you do whatever it was you, and put the date on it and mail it to them.
That's a great idea.
And the little one, I don't know, we can open it, or you can just put them away and say, these are for you, a graduation from high school present.
Mm-hmm. I love that idea. That's beautiful.
Oh, I hope you'll maybe do that.
I will.
Because absolutely. You know something? When your grandchildren find those letters, they're going to know something extra about you.
Yeah.
And the love you have for your children.
Mm-hmm.
And my experience has been when I've seen people who find letters two generations later, It's such a strength. Mm-hmm. Let him learn a little something about grandma.
Mm-hmm. That's beautiful. I love that.
Oh, I hope he'll do that. Okay.
There is something so special about holding the paper in the hand.
Yes, and why would you say? Because I have a really strong feeling about that.
Why?
Huh.
Well, for one, you know that the person who sent you the letter is holding the paper.
Yes, exactly.
And
you're
that the
touching
hand is just there writing. And yes. You can even see, you know, if there's a mistake in the handwriting or whatever.
It's a much
a
more
drop
human
of tea.
Or tears
or tears
chicken
or
soup.
Uh-huh. Yes.
But also, definitely, you're touching something mm-hmm. that has felt the touch of your hand.
Right. It's
and
tangible. It's a tangible connection.
I just read Albert Einstein's letters just sold, 12 letters, a couple more than that, I think, sold for $426,000.
Wow.
Why?
Because he touched them.
Yeah.
Yes. Wow, that's so...
Okay. Oh, I hope you do that. And they'll have a connection.
I love that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for doing this with me. I'm so happy that we met.
Thank you for having me. That's so much fun.
And I wish you just luck in everything, although I know luck's important. On top of talent is a good combination.
Thank you.
And maybe just as days go on, if you want to let me know anything more about you, you know where to find me.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, dear.
That. Thank you so much.
Well, until we meet next time,
okay.
This is Janet Gallen saying goodbye and reminding you that if you think you need to wait for a special occasion to write a love letter, writing a love letter is a special occasion. And, you know, there's something about it. Like, after the kids are in bed and you have a few minutes, the water isn't boiling for the pasta and everything's quiet and you go by yourself and just have 20 minutes of bathing in positive.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, it's wonderful.
Almost like a meditation.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And I read years ago, I know I said goodbye, but I'm back. I read years ago, a study had indicated that people who wrote 20 minutes a week, three times a week, wrote love letters, something like that, lowered their cholesterol.
I believe it.
Yes.
Now, stopping.
And I'm not even counting the 20 minutes a day that you're not cramming animal fat down your throat. I mean, really, that it has, and you can feel your breathing change. Okay.
Yeah.
So you'll do what you can, but I'm glad I planted the seed.
Thank
you, honey.
Thank
okay.
You so much.
It's a real goodbye this time. Till I talk to you later. Goodbye.